Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome once again to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. And this episode, it's beginning to look a lot like football season. And so we talk about how football crosses over with film, not only in the movies where football is the premise, but where football players are the primary actors. What turns so many former football players into actors in movies and TV? Brian and I will break that down, as well as some of the latest movies he's seen and his top five football movies of all time. But before we get to all of that, Brian, as always, tell us where you are in the quest for 10,000.
8,209.
And what is the last movie that you saw?
The L-Shaped Room. That's from 1962, starring Leslie Caron, who you may or may not remember from An American in Paris and Gigi. She's still living. She's still with us. But apparently it was her birthday or something, so TCM had it all, a retrospective of her. In this movie, her second and last Oscar nominee, she was playing a woman who was pregnant out of wedlock and rented a flat in the UK and her adventures there. And it was good. It was good. It wasn't great, but it was good.
So good, but not great. And that actually makes me think of at least one item of housekeeping that we should probably do. Listeners, as you may well be aware, Brian for some time has been trying to convince us that a movie we should really check out is Cloud Atlas. And I just feel like I need to note, I finally did that. Cloud Atlas recently appeared on Netflix. Brian texted me saying, you know what you have to do. And so, you know, I spent 3 hours of my life watching this film.
Yeah.
And here's what I'll say. What is it that you say you love about this film, Brian?
I love the theme. I love the message it has. And I think that only, considering the times we live in, it's only more, it resonates more. I actually thought that, I know that spoiler, you already told me a little bit of what you said, so I know you disagree, but I thought Hanks was fantastic. And, Hugh Grant, that's one of the late career, Hugh Grant was great. I thought Halle Berry was good. Eddie Redmayne, before we knew who he was, I really enjoyed it.
Okay, so I agree that you're right. The theme, the story, the idea of, you know, these little drops along the way in this vast ocean ripples out and how it affects and connects and love. This sort of this unifying force and that sort of thing. Thematically beautiful, right on. So I agree with you on that. I agree. Halle Berry was fantastic. My favorite actor in the film was probably Jim Broadbent. I thought he was amazing in the portion of the film where he was the primary character as well as in the supporting roles that he had. Too, I thought he really felt to me the most authentic of a lot of the actors in inhabiting these different characters. Hanks.
You didn't like that? The Scottish
goofy
or whatever.
I just think maybe it was the goofy costumes they had him in.
Hey, when he was playing the tough guy gangster and he was throwing the guy
out of the movie. Yeah, the Cockney accent and stuff. And
then, I thought it was, you know, a change of pace for him. Enjoyed it, but it was.
You could never forget it was Tom Hanks. Well, the thing where he's, you know, they're I don't know, the future stuff. where they have this other sort of language. I just, it just felt like.
And they were telling the story in the story.
On the whole, way, a little bit of overacting. And a little bit of a sense of trying too hard. Now, granted, the source material, which I've not read, but it's a big thing, and apparently they were pretty faithful to that source material. But it's 3 hours. It's just too long. It's just too long, and just inherently, you know, you have like 6 different timelines you're working with. That's just really fragile. You're just gonna have some flaws. I think the biggest one, not only some of the accents, but, you know, there were some racially problematic pieces where, you know, you have Jim Sturgis reincarnated as a vaguely Asian character, Hugo Weaving also, and it's just kind of off-putting in that way too. So I'll give you the themes and all that sort of stuff, but there, the other flaws tells me no, I don't think that was all that great.
Agree
to disagree. Another topic we had some disagreement on was who might be the next James Bond, and the next James Bond is the old James Bond. So what is your feeling on Daniel Craig reprising the role one more time?
Happy for him. He could use the money. And I don't know who the director is going to be yet. I don't think they've said, have they?
I don't think so.
I think a lot of people really want Christopher Nolan to direct, but that's not going to happen. I don't think.
That would be a weird James Bond movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, it'd be he's already tackled Batman, so. He'll be fine, and he'll wind up being one. He may pass Pierce and have more years. Maybe the same number of movies. I don't know if he'll have more or less movies, but more years than Pierce had as Bond. Mm-hmm. It has to be a swan song, I think, because he's getting close to 50. He's got to be in his mid-40s, and you just can't. You don't want to be Roger Moore, where you're fighting off people who are 40 years younger than you. I mean, you just don't want to be.
Right. And I think for some people, he may already be like the Bond. I think he really has a chance. If this last movie is as good as Skyfall was, or as even as appreciated as Casino Royale was, you know, I think he has a chance to probably be remembered no worse than second best Bond.
You know,
of all time.
Talk about Bonds, though. It's sort of like comparing, you know, baseball players from different. It's a completely different ball game. Like those movies weren't trying to be action movies as much as they were trying to be tongue-in-cheek comedy movies, and they've lost. That's almost. It's not gone, but that has definitely been minimized in the past decade and a half. And now, you know, they're more action movies than comedy.
Well, sure. I mean, different eras and that sort of thing. But I think also when you say James Bond and you're talking about movies, I think still a lot of people would first think of Sean Connery.
I think everybody first thinks of Sean. They may say something, but they think of Sean Connery first.
And then even Bond fans, probably most of them go to Roger Moore. But I'm just thinking if Craig has one more movie that's as good as the best installments he's had so far. He rises at least to number 2, and he may start overtaking Connery.
We certainly can all agree that Timothy Dalton is last. And I'm partial. I
definitely
really like Lazenby because I really like that movie. But I you know, he kind of bullshitted his way into the movie in some ways. He just sort of talked his way into a role he had no business getting. It was clear after you know, they we don't want you around. You know, he's a con.
Well, funny you talk about roles that maybe you have no business getting. That might be one that comes up as we get into our big discussion for this episode, football and the movies. I think we came to this topic because, like we said at the top of the show, it is football season, college football. Kicks off the Saturday after we are recording this episode. The NFL is close behind. Fantasy football drafts are starting. And so it just seemed like an interesting topic to think about, to break down a little bit. And there's really kind of two, to me, prongs to this. What makes football compelling as a subject for movies? And why is it that there's so many football players who have become actors? Has their celebrity kind of maybe got them in a door that otherwise they wouldn't get into? What leads them to those choices? So I don't know which one of those places you want to start with first, Brian, but your call.
I think what makes football compelling is it's a brutally physical sport. It's the same kind of thing that makes boxing compelling for film. It's very physical. It's very simple. You're trying to get past this line. Okay, it's a very, there's not much that needs to be, there are nuances, of course, but there's not much that needs to be explained, even to people not familiar with the game, about you get here and that's all we got to do. So it makes a very visually compelling thing to film. So I think that's why you see movies, even movies that don't necessarily be about football, they have a lot of football in them. Pretty much every movie about high school is going to have some kind of football scene in it.
Yeah, there's just something about it that resonates, mm-hmm. you would say.
It's a 20th century thing. I don't know what the analogous like trope or stock character was, because it feels at this point it feels like the captain of the football team, such a long-standing sort of character we all recognize. What did they do in the 19th century who was the equivalent? It's been around forever.
Yeah, it seems like the sport that right now and has been for a while, maybe the ripest for metaphor. As you were saying, the simplicity of it, the obstacles, and how, everybody wants to be the quarterback and the quarterback is hero. So it does fit into some, storytelling conventions, if not tropes, as you were saying. Do you think that might also explain why so many football players get into acting or have gotten into acting in some way? Or is there some other factors at play in your mind?
I don't really know. I find it's interesting because when you think about it, it's harder to name basketball, baseball, and other sports that have segued as frequently or as often as I can name. Off the top of my head, I can name five or six football players that have pretty lengthy. I find it more difficult to name any sort of other professional sport that had more than like a one or two cameo. Maybe they were great in them, but one or two sort of, relief spots and then they're done. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And it's not only like, the non-all-star athletes, right? You got some pretty big names, some pretty good players who transitioned into acting. Jim Brown, one of the earliest players in professional football, all-time record holder when he left.
Like winning an Oscar, but he had a 10-15 year career of pretty solid low budget action movie career, which a lot of people would shoot for. He was a Steven Seagal type, and this was in the 60s and 70s. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and then Alex Karras, who people in our generation may remember as the dad on Webster, but also was a like an all decade all pro NFL player for the Lions.
Yeah, and he was in Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles. He punched a horse. And he had some iconic moments for, but not just one. His lasted. I mean, he was able to hang around Hollywood for about 15, 20 years, which is pretty impressive.
And then, of course, famous for altogether different reasons, O.J. Simpson also went into acting. After his Hall of Fame career with the Bills and the 49ers, and did quite well,
would probably have continued to do well had the double murders incident not happened.
Yeah, that
Naked Gun 3 came out like maybe a year or two before. And his career had been about a 20-year career at that point.
Yeah. It strikes me, you know, as we've been talking through this, and maybe especially with OJ, maybe it's because of I'm remembering some of the documentaries watched recently. Perhaps one of the simplest explanations for the preponderance of football actors is how the rise of that sport to its prominence really married so well to television to begin with. There's been lots of books, articles, you know, all kinds of things linking football's popularity to how TV friendly of a sport was. So perhaps it's kind of a no-brainer then that would also be true for athletes after finishing their football careers would find themselves, you know, kind of pushed more towards entertainment and eventually into movie roles. You know, you're on TV, you've got bankable stars. Studios would definitely be desirous of these kind of guys.
Well, going back even to the earlier, about the time of the real rise of the NCAA, right? Probably about 10 years post Roosevelt sort of making the NCAA out of thin air to make football safe again, or make football safe for young men. All of them, not all, but there were major comedy groups, and it was mostly comedy. Now, I don't know how many serious roles, but the comedy, like silent stars like Harold Lloyd. And then you move on, and even Buster Keaton was in a football movie, and the Marx Brothers did a football movie. So they were, and even by then, even by the 30s, kind of like this trope of, and it wasn't high school at that point, because I don't know how many high schools there were, but this trope of the jock football player in college had already become pretty much exactly like we see it now, and this was by the mid-20s. So it's really amazing how quickly that sort of stereotype got settled. And like, that's exactly, you know, this is who this is. These are the people that want to pursue this, this athletic pursuit are this type of person. And that was the way it was going to be for the next 100 years. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. In terms of recent football players, we mentioned some that were around in kind of some of the beginning years where the NFL kind of rose to prominence in the 60s, 50s, and 60s. Probably the most recent, two of the most recent players who have turned into some successful acting careers. One, I'd say Michael Strahan is probably significant in that, you know, And probably a pretty good ratio of success as a football player. And now he's kind of seems to be the next kind of it guy, at least on television. If that translates into film, we'll see. But also, one of my favorite actors currently, he's been in a lot of TV and a lot of movies, kind of as a that guy, Terry Crews, former player for, I believe, the Washington Redskins. Recent names. And of course, you know, even though he never played in the NFL in any sort of significant way, he was a player for Miami Hurricanes in the 80s. And now he's probably the biggest action superstar in the world, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. So, for whatever reason, football players.
Bill Goldberg also.
That's right, Goldberg and a lot of others. For whatever reason, football players seem to have a pretty high ceiling when it comes to being involved in movies and TVs after their playing career is over. Just something to think about as you draft players and root for your favorite teams. Who might you also be seeing on a screen a couple of years from now? Speaking of football on the screen, Brian, let's go ahead and move into our top five, your top five football movies of all time.
Okay. Well, I haven't talked about it just a little while back. I'm going to go way back with this. I'll say number five is the Marx Brothers movie, Horse Feathers. It's still one of the funniest, like, you know, football movies I've seen. There aren't a lot of comedies about football, but it's one of the funniest ones, and I enjoyed it. Their take on the Dan Burgess. Well, this is probably pre-professional, right after professional, but it was good. Coming in number four, a movie that you might argue is not really a football movie, but I'm going to say Jerry Maguire.
Okay, it's borderline, I think, is a full-fledged football movie, but yeah, enough scenes.
The other side of the sport. I mean, and then, you know, but the end when he's going down there and he gets knocked out and he gets up and all that was pretty. That was football.
Yeah, and you got the NFL draft kind of mixed in with that, and yeah, I'm not going to argue that one too much with you, especially because you're my personal ambassador of Quan. So what's okay. Number three?
Number three, going back to high school football, Friday Night Lights. Friday Night Lights is a really good, and the series is great too. So the series only makes the movie better, I think.
Right. No, I totally agree with that.
I think they augment each other. Like you see one, and then they sort of build on each other and become sort of this phenomenon. And there was a 30 for 30 documentary about the team that they played called What Carter Lost just recently aired. It is sort of interesting to see how dirty that type of situation was and how those ugly stereotypes got involved quickly.
What do you think makes a film like Friday Night Lights and the way it shows football a little bit different than other movies like Jerry Maguire or Horse Feathers or some of the others on your list?
Well, what's funny is that you see in Friday Night Lights, you know, it simultaneously demystifies and remystifies football. You know what I'm saying? Like it deconstructs this idea that we have, but it turns it into this other kind of worshipful experience altogether at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of building it up. It's tearing down what we think about football, but building up this new thing to sort of take its place. And it really works.
Well, Friday Night Lights also notable for one of the least weird, awkward Billy Bob Thornton roles that he's ever taken. So that alone deserves a top five rating.
He looks painfully thin, doesn't he? Like, doesn't he look sick?
Yeah, maybe he just didn't have Angelina Jolie's blood around his neck for most of that shoot. I don't know. What's number two?
Let's see. Number two. Number two, the original Longest Yard.
You didn't like the remake?
The second one was crap. And has not held up well at all. I think Jamie Foxx's character plays this like gay sort of it is Jamie.
That's Tracy Morgan. Tracy Morgan.
Okay.
That one, yeah.
Tracy Morgan's character is like this really uncomfortable stereotype that has not aged all.
Yeah.
And it just looks cringeworthy.
Yeah, the remake's really bad. Like, yeah.
They took a good movie and they just ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
The first movie's really good. I mean, and it has that sort of like odd 70s vibe to it. It was a little off kilter. It's not quite, you know, it's a little rough around the edges and almost, you know, maybe some intentional, maybe some just the time of it, but it kind of adds to its charm.
Yeah.
The second movie just takes all that out and puts in focus.
Yeah. You've got the cinematography or just the graphic design of that movie. The original makes it unique. It seems that it even stands out even among 70s movies, which the remake just doesn't at all in any sort of way.
It takes the story and rips it of every bit of its heart and essence and then throws it out there.
Well, if the Longest Yard is number two, then what would number one be?
I think we're both going to be in agreement here. It's going to be a movie that is near and dear to our, right about the time we graduated high school, entering into college. And that's Any Given Sunday. Maybe the most consistently underrated movie of Oliver Stone's career. Like it's not, I don't think it's listed in the greatest hits or the masterpiece, but it should be because it's, you know, it's why there's so much about it that is why we watch football, why we love football, what we want football to be about, And while we, you know, even if it's all a lie, it makes us feel better about watching it.
It's my favorite quote by Oliver Stone about the movie, because he was talking about, you know, baseball and football. You know, baseball was what we dreamed to be. Football is what we are. And that kind of, I think that sums up that movie well. I think it probably sums up our discussion well about just film and football in general and why they go together. Football feels like at times a pretty apt description of reality. And even if it's not, we can easily lie to ourselves.
By the way, I forgot a movie that I should have included in my top five, and that is Air Bud Golden Retriever.
No, we'll just put that in your honorable mentions and name a couple others.
Waterboy.
Wildcats with Goldie Hawn. The Replacements, Keanu Reeves. One that would actually be in my top five, probably in my top three, would be Remember the Titans.
Oh, yeah, great movie.
Wonderful movie. So, listeners, tell us what you think.
In The Blind Side. We didn't mention The Blind Side.
Mention The Blind Side either. So tell us what you would have in your top five football movies, what you think of the marriage of film and football, by visiting Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com, or dropping us a line on Twitter at 10kmovies. That's T-E-N-K. And thank you so much for listening and being a part of this conversation. And we hope that we will get to come back to you in another couple of weeks. One feature we might have this fall is you might get to hear Brian and I checking in a little bit about our favorite football team, the Auburn Tigers, on this podcast as well. So we might
have hot
hopes. Yeah, we might have an additional little comment or two about that along the way. But until then, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11.